like the currents in a current bun. In 1910, Rutherford, assisted by his student Hans Geiger, who would later invent the radiation detector that bears his name, fired ionized helium atoms, or alpha particles, at a sheet of gold foil. Geiger would also later become a loyal Nazi, unhesitatingly betraying Jewish colleagues, including many who had helped him. To Rutherford's astonishment, some of the particles bounced back. It was as if, he said, he had fired a 15-inch shell at a sheet of paper and it rebounded into his lap. This was just not supposed to happen. After considerable reflection, he realized there could be only one possible explanation. The particles that bounced back were striking something small and dense at the heart of the atom, while the other particles sailed through unimpeded. An atom, Rutherford realized, was mostly empty space, with a very dense nucleus at the center. This was a most gratifying discovery, but it presented one immediate problem. By all the laws of conventional physics, atoms shouldn't therefore exist. Let us pause for a moment and consider the structure of the atom as we know it now. Every atom is made from three kinds of elementary particles. Protons, which have a positive electrical charge, electrons, which have a negative electrical charge, and neutrons, which have no charge. Protons and neutrons are packed into the nucleus, while electrons spin around outside. The number of protons is what gives an atom its chemical identity. An atom with one proton is an atom of hydrogen. One with two protons is helium. With three protons is lithium, and so on up the scale. Each time you add a proton, you get a new element. Because the number of protons in an atom is always balanced by an equal number of electrons, you will sometimes see it written that it is the number of electrons that defines an element. It comes to the same thing. The way it was explained to me is that protons give an atom its identity, electrons its personality. Neutrons don't influence an atom's identity, but they do add to its mass. The number of neutrons is generally about the same as the number of protons, but they can vary up and down slightly. Add a neutron or two, and you get an isotope. The terms you hear in reference to dating techniques in archaeology refer to isotopes. Carbon-14, for instance, which is an atom of carbon with 6 protons and 8 neutrons, the 14 being the sum of the two. Neutrons and protons occupy the atom's nucleus. The nucleus of an atom is tiny, only 1/1,000,000th of a billionth of the full volume of the atom, but fantastically dense since it contains virtually all the atom's mass. As Cropper has put it, if an atom were expanded to the size of a cathedral, the nucleus would be only about the size of a fly, but a fly many thousands of times heavier than the cathedral. It was this spaciousness, this resounding, unexpected roominess, that had Rutherford scratching his head in 1910. It is still a fairly astounding notion to consider that atoms are mostly empty space, and that the solidity we experience all around us is an illusion. When two objects come together in the real world, billiard balls are most often used for illustration, they don't actually strike each other. Rather, as Timothy Ferris explains, the negatively charged fields of the two balls repel each other. Were it not for their electrical charges, they could, like galaxies, pass right through each other unscathed. When you sit in a chair, you are not actually sitting there, but levitating above it at a height of 1 angstrom, 1/100,000,000th of a centimeter. Your electrons and its electrons implacably opposed to any closer intimacy. The picture that nearly everybody has in mind of an atom is of an electron or two flying around a nucleus, like planets orbiting a sun. This image was created in 1904 based on little more than clever guesswork by a Japanese physicist named Hantaro Nagaoka. It is completely wrong, but durable just the same. As Isaac Asimov liked to note, it inspired generations of science fiction writers to create stories of worlds within worlds, in which atoms become tiny inhabited solar systems, or our solar system turns out to be merely a mote in some much larger scheme. Even now, CERN, the European Organization for Nuclear Research, uses Nagaoka's image as a logo on its website. In fact, as physicists were soon to realize, electrons are not like orbiting planets at all, but more like the blades of a spinning fan, managing to fill every bit of space in their orbits simultaneously. But with the crucial difference that the blades of a fan only seem to be everywhere at once, electrons are. Needless to say, very little of this was understood in 1910 or for many years afterward. Rutherford's finding presented some large and immediate problems, not least that no electron should be able to orbit a nucleus without crashing. Conventional electrodynamic theory demanded that a flying electron should very quickly run out of energy in only an instant or so and spiral into the nucleus, with disastrous consequences for both. There was also the problem of how protons, with their positive charges, could bundle together inside the nucleus without blowing themselves and the rest of the atom apart. Clearly, whatever was going on down there in the world of the very small was not governed by the laws that applied in the macro world, where our expectations reside. As physicists began to delve into this subatomic realm, they realized that it wasn't merely different from anything we knew, but different from anything ever imagined. Because atomic behavior is so unlike ordinary experience, Richard Feynman once observed, it is very difficult to get used to, and it appears peculiar and mysterious to everyone, both to the novice and to the experienced physicist. When Feynman made that comment, physicists had had half a century to adjust to the strangeness of atomic behavior. So think how it must have felt to Rutherford and his colleagues in the early 1910s, when it was all brand new. One of the people working with Rutherford was a mild and affable young Dane named Niels Bohr. In 1913, while puzzling over the structure of the atom, Bohr had an idea so exciting that he postponed his honeymoon to write what became a landmark paper. Because physicists couldn't see anything so small as an atom, they had to try to work out its structure from how it behaved when they did things to it, as Rutherford had done by firing alpha particles at foil. Sometimes, not surprisingly, the results of these experiments were puzzling. One puzzle